Please come to order, meeting of the Community Services Committee meeting. Council members that are present are Council President Karen Hurley-Nagel, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Tackett, Councilmember Bell, Councilmember Street, Councilmember Smiley, Councilmember Cartier, Councilmember Weiner, Councilmember Diller. My legislative aide is Nikai Trailer. I'm Penrose Hollins. The first item on today's meeting is to approve the minutes of the November 29 meeting.
Motion to approve is distributed.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Let me also say that I have a message here that there will be three council members absent from this meeting, Councilman Woods, Councilman Sheldon, as well as Councilman Powers. We'll move on to the agenda for today. The third item on the agenda is the federal housing budget presentation. I'm told that the councilor, that the general manager is out today, so we would get the presentation by Carrie Casey, and I believe the second part is going to come from you, Jane, a part of it. Okay, very well. We'll move on to the federal housing budget presentation.
Okay, good afternoon. Carrie Casey from the Department of Community Services. I was asked to give a brief update to County Council on what's happening with the federal budget, and you probably all know bits and pieces as well. What we are hearing is the current year we are being funded on current year funding, and they call it a continuing resolution in Congress, and that expires on April 28th. And we will, what we're hearing, and it isn't final yet, is that Congress will just extend that continuing resolution for the entire fiscal year. And I say that because to me that's like relatively good news, because that will fund us, we approximate about a 5% reduction in funding for our federal housing entitlement funds. So we were anxious that the possibility of them doing some, you know, we hear about all these domestic program cuts, starting them this year, which would impact us July 1st. But what we're hearing is that they're just going to fund the federal government like they funded it last year, which is actually pretty good. As many of you also know, our Housing Choice Voucher Program, which is our largest program, it's about $17 million we get annually, did start on January 1st. We had some staff attend some training where there was some HUD guidance. That's the craziest thing about this, is that we'll start operating our program and HUD will give us absolutely no guidance on what we're supposed to do. So obviously we have to operate as conservatively as possible. So we since January 1, even before January 1, we haven't been taking anyone off our waiting list. So we've taken people off, and we've interviewed them, and we have them poised and ready to go to come in for a meeting to get a voucher. So we're ready once we know what our budget is. We aren't able to do anything because we can't. That would just be, you know, that could be disastrous if we went and did a whole bunch of stuff without knowing what our budget is. What HUD has told the folks that I work with is that we are going to be operating the calendar year at an administrative operational proration of 77%. Which last year we were funded at 84%, so it is a significant cut, and that what is like the most concerning, but we have a plan, so we're okay, is that usually they fund our housing, our rental monthly payments at 99%, like they'll give us 99% of what we're authorized to get, and HUD has advised our housing authorities that they should be budgeting at 94%. So that's sequestration levels for us. Luckily, we haven't been doing a lot of activity, and we feel with a healthy reserve, but you're not allowed to have too much reserve, that will be fine, and we budgeted accordingly. We anticipate that about a $200,000 to $400,000 reduction, and we are ready and prepared for that. So what our plan is, specifically for the Housing Choice Voucher Program, because I think I've come several times and said we haven't been able to do anything on our waiting list, is we feel pretty confident that we're going to be able to start housing people, the last 200 or so from our waiting list. And we hope to have that waiting list done by mid-2018, which is like in a year, basically, a year and a month or two. So we hope to have everyone off that waiting list in the next year. That's really big to us because we have made a commitment. We opened that waiting list in 2015. It'll only be 3 years. Usually, last time was 6 years. So it'll be 3 years that we've gone through the 500 names. We have a commitment to keep that utilization as high as possible. We also are realigning some duties with staff to make sure that we can still, you know, you have all the requirements and all the administrative burden of the Section 8 program, which is huge. We're not going to hire anybody. We are going to try to, just rearrange caseloads and make it work. We also are not going to absorb any new clients coming from any other housing authorities. We're going to bill, which creates an administrative burden because we have to make sure people pay us. But we think we have with our fiscal department, we have the capability to do that. So that's the really big news is
what
we
is
think
it?
That we are going to be okay for the 17, and we think we're going to start taking people and housing people off our waiting list, which is really, really good news. And because we've had folks that have been on our waiting list since 2015. On the community development block grant side
so
and home,
people can't sleep.
An emergency solutions grant program, which is about $3 million in total, we are projecting about a 5% reduction baseline. So we will, start planning that budget and bring you the annual plan in April. The only other thing, a bit of good news, because I know I always say bad news here. I feel like I'm always like, again, the Debbie Downer of the group here. Is that we were recently notified that we were once again certified as a high-performing agency through HUD, and that's all different types. There's 16 different indicators that they look at through our Section 8 program, and we also are in the process of reviewing our federal grant proposals. We have 57 applications that were received. The deadline was December 20th, and we're beginning that review process now, and we should have recommendations in mid-March. The only other thing I'd like to mention on this, and then if there's any questions, is that we are concerned about future federal budgets. And we have heard, and this is what my folks, and I'm sure everybody else has heard too, I mean, we hear about the, even today, with this big, speech today, President Trump's proposed budget zeroes out CDBG and home completely.
Yeah.
So what we, that's just a proposed budget. And it's only really for next year, because the next year it'll be an election year. And, it could be just 1 year. So we know, we should know by mid-March, well, we should maybe know today, but we should know by mid-March what exactly is in the proposed budget. That's the worst thing for us, is not knowing and not being able to prepare, but we don't think that that'll actually happen, knock on wood. And then, that we've also internally, in talking to my general manager and the staff, we're gonna work this year to really try to highlight our programs and do more out in the community and press release, whatever we can do to sell, to show that our housing programs are actually like economic development infrastructure projects and that we help, just to try to get, because we're concerned that there'll be so many programs that are risk of being cut that we wanna make sure our congressional delegation, which we know supports us, also knows how important our programs are too. So that's going to be our task for this year, because we feel pretty comfortable that our funding is secure for this year. We'll also need your help, obviously, when we have to advocate, and we'll be in touch through our general manager to make sure that that you all have the opportunity. Hopefully you'll do that. You always have, and that's wonderful to do that for us. So that's basically where we are, and I just wanted to let you know that. That's not all bad news.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. Thank you for your great report. I just came back from Washington, D.C. from the National Association of Counties Conference this weekend at our Energy, Environment, and Land Use Steering Committee. There was a representative from HUD. He started off by saying that he's not authorized to make any representations as to the program, but then when we specifically asked him about CDBG, he corroborated the fact that it's projected to be zeroed out. Of all 3,000 counties there, all of us went to Capitol Hill or communicated with our congresspersons. And that's just the beginning of the lobbying effort. The National League of Governors, the Council on State Governments, NACO, and all the organizations are going to be working real hard to preserve SCDBG.
That's wonderful. Thank you. That's good to know. And if we can provide any information, if you need that for letters or... We have all that, we have to keep all that for HUD. They get us to the penny and make sure we have all our beneficiary data and we can show all that. So whatever you need,
we
can help make that case.
I wanted to ask you about the smoking ban that HUD is...
Hey.
It's only for people who live in public housing.
And it doesn't include medical marijuana.
But it's our understanding that it's going to be rolled out over the next 18 months or something, that there would be a smoking ban for folk who live in public housing subsidized housing. What is that?
Yeah, I see. Kai mentioned that to me because we were talking about this upcoming Wilmington Housing Authority Board training that's happening, and to be honest with you, I haven't specifically, we don't have public housing, but the, so now I'm always following what the voucher program is saying. I don't know much about, I don't know my, anything about smoking ban, but I'm happy to find out more and send it to you.
I'm wondering how it would impact on our Section 8 clients, since we're considered a housing authority and we're using federal dollars for Section 8. Does that impact the smoking ban, impact those families?
It wouldn't with our voucher clients, because this is, I think it's specific, and I'll look into it, double check. I think it's specific to public housing units.
Okay.
So housing units that have the subsidy or apartment complexes that have subsidy. Our clients have a voucher that helps them with their subsidy. That's, I mean, they can, that won't, if there's, you know, whatever happens to them, they won't, it won't impact them. I'm almost 100% sure, and I'll double check that.
Sure.
But I think it's just for actual public housing, which we don't own or operate. So I tend to not pay as much attention to that because it's a little more complex than just the voucher program.
Thank you. Councilman Street.
Well, I'm serious, man. I don't know how we're going to play that out, because Delaware, in its wisdom, in my opinion, lack thereof, legalized medicinal marijuana. We've already got complaints from folks riding DART and this, that, and the other about people coming on and off, reeking of marijuana, drivers upset. So now you go to ban smoking and housing authorities. But I'm legally entitled to smoke marijuana for medical purposes, which law prevails.
It's getting very complicated, Councilman Street. I got the same complaint about bus drivers can't barely drive the bus because they're overwhelmed with the marijuana on the buses now. So, thank you very much. Any further questions for Councilman Street?
Not going to blindside you or the administration. But, you know, it's not a secret. The county executive said he was going to try to go forward with the senior housing in the Route 9 corridor, probably on or around the library property. So at some point in time, you know, I think we should have a discussion with the council about where we are and how we're trying to proceed with that. So not today, but whenever you can get to it, if we can put it on the agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Absolutely.
And Carrie Casey with Community Services. You know, Will Matko is doing a big study of the Route 9 corridor, and their Route 9 master corridor plan is almost done. So that might be a really, you know, that might be a good agenda item, because it includes senior housing. They recommend senior housing on the library site. So I mean, that would, you know, maybe to look at the whole
community.
Councilwoman Diller.
I just have a question. I had asked about senior housing on the Our Lady of Grace site. Mm-hmm. And when they first started trying to develop that, one of the responses that I got was there were no tax credits available in Delaware for senior housing. Is that still true?
Carrie Casey with the Department of Community Services. I'm not 100% sure if that's still true, because I know that Leon Wiener Associates, they do senior housing, but they didn't get the competitive ones that Our Lady of Grace got. They got 4% tax credits for Carlton Court.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I don't think it's, they're as competitive as family rental housing, which is, you know, the priority
that's
of the
big
SHA
need.
Because
right.
That's where the need is.
Right.
Yes.
Because I mean, when they did the Our Lady of Grace, the apartment complex, they did a lot of first floor, one bedrooms, which would be, you know, accessible, knowing that they couldn't do the senior, but trying to do some accommodation. So I was just interested because, to my knowledge, Delaware has not done senior housing like that for a while.
No, well, and Carrie Casey with community, that's new construction, which means they definitely would not, that the DSHA will probably be very non-competitive to fund a new senior housing project, which is something we'd have to work on if we were going to apply for tax credit for this.
Right.
However, because the need is new construction of family housing, but there are preservation to preserve senior housing, Mary Dell, Carlton.
Right, which, exactly,
you know, that
exactly.
That's
the already existing stuff.
Something that would be something we would have to work on.
Yeah.
And there's also an ordinance here, ordinance number 17008, which appropriates actual program income to the down payment revolving loan program. I think that's pretty self-explanatory, unless some council member have a question on this ordinance that's coming up tonight. Seeing none, then we'll move on to Community Recreation Center's presentation. Jane, you're going to do that?
Thank you. Hi, Jane, from the Department of Community Services, Division of Community Resources. Thank you for having us. Before we get started with the presentation, I just want to mention that each of you have received a packet. We'll distribute them. That includes the application for the Summer Youth Employment Program. The application processing event will take place in mid-March, and so we encourage you to pass the applications out among any interested youth ages 14 to 20. The applications are available, additional hard copies, at libraries and also at the Gilliam Building, and it is available online, so you can send the link with all the necessary information. So so we're excited to have the program again this year in the planning for it, and hoping for another 500 youth to come through our doors later this month. The also in your packet are the registration forms and scholarship forms for summer camp opportunities. There's a variety of programs that we serve the entire geographic area of Central County, so please feel free to
I'm sorry, Jane. Those packets were put in your boxes earlier.
Okay.
There were a few council members that were here. That's why they have them. But they're in your box.
But you have it. Okay, great. And if you need any more forms, please, don't hesitate to contact us. So that having said, we wanted to take this opportunity to review the programs and services that we offer through the community recreation centers and also a variety of other satellite locations. These centers are, house our sports and recreation programs, as well as focusing on programs that increase wellness, opportunities, education, art and culture, and just a number of other programs that we wanted to share and to update County Council on. Last year, we served approximately 40,000 people through one of our programs at the community recreation centers. And we do all of this with a very small but dedicated staff of employees. Some of them are here with me today, so I want to take the opportunity to introduce them. Susan Eggert is the Assistant Community Service Administrator, and she oversees the recreation centers and the direct programming. Andy Biro is a sports administrator, and so he oversees all of the sports and sports leagues, both for youth and adults that play throughout New Castle County. And then Latoya Rodriguez is a community service coordinator. She's based out of Garfield Park Community Recreation Center, but she's responsible for programming in Newcastle, Greater Newcastle, the Route 9 corridor, all the way down through Middletown. So she has quite a large geographic area, and so I'm glad that she could be with us today because she holds down the fort in multiple locations. So with that being said, I'll turn it over to Susan, who's going to give the presentation.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to zip through this. We're very proud of what happens in the Community Recreation Center, so there's a lot of information here. So sit back and relax. Jane mentioned just a few moments ago that our focus really is to provide a wide range of programs and activities in the community through the Community Resources Division. And we really want to focus as much as we can on underserved areas and populations that have special needs, whether it may be seniors or people with cognitive or physical disabilities. Okay. So the recreation centers do that, and our goal really is to provide very affordable activities and programs, and they can range anywhere from Zumba classes to guitar lessons, and we'll get into some more detail about that. At the community recreation centers, there's a real range of sports and athletic activities also, whether it's indoor sports leagues or the recreation camps, instructional sports camps, and clinics. And this is just a little bit about those adaptive programs that I talked about, programs for people with cognitive and physical disabilities. We have a longstanding partnership with CHIMES that provides a vocational training services for folks at our Garfield Park site. They come in and do some light cleaning regularly, weekly. We employ a part-time person with Down syndrome at Hokesson, and we have consistently over the last several years grown our adaptive programming, and we're engaging, you know, nearly 900 participants and more than 300 sessions at all of our recreation centers. So I mentioned seniors, or you know, the terminology these days is 50 plus or 55 plus. So we've expanded the programming for those folks who are 55 plus, and we've branded that as our 55 plus lifestyles program. I'm not going to read everything that's up there. You've got that packet, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's been incredibly popular. There's a membership. There's no fee for that membership, but it allows the members to attend some activities free of charge, and which allows us to have good contact information for those people. So that's an incentive. It's working. We've got 250 members at Garfield Park and 450 members at Hokesson. And we've packaged these under some headings, which we think are pretty clever. 55 plus social, 55 plus fun, 55 plus fit, and 55 plus wise. And the wise could be anything informational. It might be retirement planning, nutrition. There's a real range of things. So Safety Town, I'm sure you are well aware of, and that is held at our Garfield Park and Hokesson Recreation Centers. That's for little ones, 4 to 6. That's a program that is a week-long half-day camp, and it is really relies on a lot of teen volunteers to help make it happen. So more than 200 kids have gone through the Safety Town program there at Hokesson, and Garfield is a little bit smaller, but that's a popular program.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. Do you want to entertain any questions as we go along, or hold them to the end?
What is your preference,
Susan?
We're fine with questions, yeah.
Okay. Sure. Well, that particular slide that you have, a little concerning to the fact that, is it because of size that we can only host 17 participants at our Garfield Park facility versus 234 at Hokesson for the Safety Town?
Yeah, Jane Rattini. Actually, last year was our first year at Garfield.
Okay.
So, and we held it during spring break, so it is a limited time.
Okay.
And we're offering it again this year and hoping to expand. So we just, you know, that was 1 year versus
okay.
multiple years at Hokesson.
Good explanation.
Okay.
It would seem to me that we should have comparable numbers, especially.
No, that's what I'm glad you asked that. Yeah, at Hokesson, the Safety Town is offered for a much longer period of time, so we can actually get more kids in too. But it being the first year, we need to grow it more. So a little bit more about Garfield Park. You can see nearly 200 classes were offered. Registered folks, 2,671. There's a lot of informal programs, sort of what we call drop-ins. So people can come in and use the gym and walk. They come in and socialize. We have a 55 plus program called Morning Mingle. So they come in and just spend some time together. We might have an informational session that matches up with that. We have computer training there, all the fitness programs that you might expect. Unusual things like a weekly bread giveaway, and that's a partnership. And we can talk a little bit more about that later, but that's a partnership with a faith-based community organization. I had mentioned the 55 plus program. And we have long running Yes You Can, which is a program for people with limited mobility to get a little bit of exercise, and that's been popular and running for many years. Oops. And so the sports and summer camps are held there. Just want to make sure that we take a minute to look at the winter sports. There's a Hispanic youth soccer league, and you can take a look at those numbers. Mm-hmm. I mean, more than 500 boys and girls ages 8 to 18 are involved with the Hispanic youth soccer league that's held there at Garfield. And Andy's here if there's any questions about that league. The summer camp takes place there. That's 8 weeks, more than 300 campers. And that includes before and after care, too. So that adds a whole layer of coordination and effort and staffing to summer camps. And you may know that there is co-located there at Garfield Park the lending library. So it's small, but the whole collection statewide can be delivered to customers there through the interlibrary loan. The resident materials are about 3,000, and there's over 5,000 registered library card holders there. Staff does a great job there of library staff and community recreation center staff. We really team up to help each other out at that co-location site. Right, LaToya, we do a pretty good job of being a good team to make sure that we cover both the library activities and the recreation center activities. We're growing the creative arts programs at Garfield Park too. Last year we had a great partnership with the Metropolitan Wilmington Urban League Young Professionals Group. And they helped us plan a series of arts workshops, which culminated in a kind of a gallery show. And that was really popular. For the first year, we had about 50 participants. We're looking at a small Delaware Division of the Arts grant to help us do that again this year, and that will start in May. And then we have monthly Creative Arts Saturdays, free sessions for the neighborhoods. Come and do some fun creative things there. We have an annual health fair that takes place at Garfield Park. Lots of resources, lots of information for folks to take advantage of. We had over 100 guests last year. We're looking at our next health fair being April 6th at Garfield Park. Another thing that takes place there at Garfield Park is, again, a longtime partnership with the 4-H, and that's an after-school program. Averaging about 18 kids come ages 5 to 10. There's a real focus on reading and sessions around the 4-H curriculum, which includes things like the citizenship and science programs and healthy living. So, in addition to all that, we have some other things happening too. There's and maybe I would hope that most of you have seen the community garden there. It started out with just a few beds, and it continues to grow. It's a partnership with the literally grow and grow in the number of beds too. It's a partnership with the Delaware Center for Horticulture, and so we get the kids, whether they're from PAL or the summer camp program, to be involved with that. There are a couple of community volunteers that help us maintain it. It's a really nice addition to the activities there at Garfield Park. We also run the summer nutrition program. Last year at four different parks, Dunleith, Oakmont, Simon's Gardens, and Rosegate, 5,000 meals were served. And so here we are at the Hokesson Community Recreation Center, and that too is co-located with a PAL. That opened up in 2001. And again, it similar programming as those that I described with Garfield Park. Maybe one that's a little different that's offered there is Japanese flower arranging. And then we have sort of informal clubs that have almost developed themselves. People come and play Mahjong there in the lobby area. We've started a bridge card game club We have folks that come and gather there and do knitting together. We have all the fitness programs, wellness and fitness programs that you could think of, Pilates and that sort of thing. A program that's been growing that's really popular is Parkinson's aerobics. So we have lots of people that are dealing with that disease that come in and work on their stamina and their strength through this Parkinson's aerobics class. So you can see lots of classes offered there, 300, more than 8,000 registrants. Ballroom dancing, we have all of the 55 plus programs that I talked about. We do have a fall time senior health fair there. Last year we had 700 attendees. And then I think we've had 3 years of the Hokesson Book and Art event, which is a nice partnership with some of the local organizations, the library. We've had, there were 500 attendees at the last event. It's a nice way to showcase local artists and authors. So sports and athletics there, winter programs include everything from baseball and basketball to co-rec volleyball league, women's field hockey, 104 teams, 972 adults, and 509 youth. So lots of calories burned there at that rec center. In the summer programs, there's 25 teams, about 500 youth basketball, baseball clinics, the girls' basketball leagues, field hockey, volleyball camps, wrestling camps. So a real variety of the sports are offered there. Whoops. Again, there's the health fair. Lots of information, free health screenings. And then down at Middletown, we have the Appaquinimink Community Recreation Center, much smaller in a lot of ways. It is just down the hall from the Appaquinimink Library. But again, fewer classes, but again, a real variety. 90 classes are offered, more than 900 registrants. And again, the traditional fitness sorts of things like Zumba and yoga are a super popular program for the little kids. Ages 1 to 5 is the movers and shakers. That always has a waiting list. So that's super popular. And we've added some middle school age programming there too, which we're excited about. A sort of after school social club that gives kids that age something to do. And then around the adaptive programming, we've just added a cheerleading program for largely youth with Down syndrome. And the Brandywine Town Center, for programming there too. That opened to us in 2007. There's Ikebana, the Japanese flower arranging. We have a popular summer youth fashion camp that's held there. Ballroom dancing is held there. That's very popular. Zumba and yoga. And another very popular dancing offering is adaptive line dancing. And so organizations that serve people with disabilities make a point to come to that. We've got a great instructor, and they have a great time dancing for an hour in Thursday evenings. So we've got a lot going on, but we're doing more. We're looking at, and we are doing programming at the Glasgow Bank Barn. We started just a couple months ago. We're doing, and these have been really popular too. Just a fun Saturday nature crafts activity. It's mostly moms with their kids are coming, or groups of women, and having fun doing that. Also another really popular local history sort of quiz presentation and competition. That's also been popular at the Bank Barn. We're looking toward having our first Fix-It Cafe. Has anybody heard about Fix-It Cafes? So we're partnering with St. George's Vo-Tech School to hold a series of these once a month for the next several months. And that is where people can bring anything that they can carry, really small kitchen appliances, things that have broken that they have a hunch they could, you know, lamps to rewire, that sort of thing. They could actually fix and not send to the landfill, but they need a little bit of help with that. So it's a little bit of a trend that's growing. It's really working on, you know, the sustainability and recycling effort. So we're hoping that's going to go. And then we're getting more people out into the parks. We've had different walking events, like the first day hike had over 50 participants. We'll have an adult hiking club and a hiking club for parents with kids in backpacks or strollers, too. And they will go out to different parks a couple times a month for the next several months. So we'll see how that goes. So that's a quick tour of the recreation centers and the sports and athletics programs that take place there. Here's the nature little photo of the nature craft activity. There's Hannah Penn there, who was the second wife of William Penn, presenting at the bank barn. And then there's an image of our first day hike.
She held up pretty good.
Out at Rockwood. What'd you say?
She held up pretty good.
Yes, she has, right? From the early 1700s. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Susan. I'm sorry?
Thank you.
Okay. It's quite an impressive presentation, and quite a number, far more than I imagined we had in terms of programs and what's going on at a recreation center. So it's Councilman Tackett, Councilwoman Diller, and Councilman Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I really have to commend the department. I mean, these activities that are going on are really amazing. And although I've not been able to attend that history cruise, my aide has, and she has reported back that it has been like standing room only, which is, you know, shows the need of what's going on there. Have we looked at potentially doing anything like with the new high fives, like let's do some kind of a program there, because we got that great pavilion next to it, per se? I mean, this seems like a huge opportunity now, given that, you know, we were kind of precedent setting when we put that in, you know, to something there. But
We have Jane Rattini. We are talking. We do have a staff member who's dedicated to adaptive programming, and so certainly looking at Glasgow Park and utilizing the new High Five playground, and then being able to get indoors. You know, whether it's at the pavilion that's right there or at the bank barn to do another program that's in conjunction with the parents that are bringing their children. You know, we just see a lot of potential.
And I think it would help us, too, because we are getting a few complaints that the parents aren't watching the kids in that fenced-in area. They're just turning them loose. So if we find something, we can see where the parents will be at.
Thank you.
Diller.
Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Weiner, Councilman Street.
Yes, could you send us a blurb about that Fix-It Cafe? I just had something come over the next door neighbor thing that I'm on, that they're looking for somebody who can help people learn how to fix things.
I
think it would be great.
And I'm sorry, we didn't put this in the slideshow. We should have. But you can visit the webpage, ncccde.org/bankbarn.
Bankbarn. Okay.
It's up there.
All right. Great.
Councilman Weiner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susan, I've had a chance to observe Brandywine Town Center Community Center on Thursdays during the Zumba and Ballroom, and there's great participation. It's a great use of the building, as well as just for community meetings, which I go to regularly there. So there has been some leaking and maintenance needed at the building. There's not clarity as between the county and Acadia Realty as to who's responsible for various aspects of maintenance. I'd just like to get some clarity on that, because the deed restrictions are supposed to require Acadia Realty to be responsible for maintenance, such as like the roof leaks, and the county's supposed to be responsible for daily cleaning of the place. But then there's that hazy area in the middle. I've actually had negotiations with Mel Monzak, the attorney for the client, his client, Acadia Realty, and we sort of reached an impasse on clarification. So I just want to reset that button, see where we are, and then go from there. Thank you.
Councilman Street, Councilman Smiley.
I have my hand up answering these.
You passed. Councilman Smiley.
Okay. Let me be my usual self and ask, is there any evaluation of the net cost to the county for all of these programs?
James Attenney, yes, as a part of our annual budget process, we do calculate in an annual review programs and services and the cost per participant as well as the cost per capita. So we do review them. We also review our fee structure annually during our budget preparation period to ensure that we are competitive yet affordable, because that is, again, we are looking to cover our administrative costs as much as possible, to cover at least our direct cost of instructors or other materials and supplies. And we do not run programs that don't have the threshold of participants signed up and paying for those programs. And so we do.
Well, we don't charge for all the programs.
The vast majority, at Hokesson, for instance, we do charge. Others at Garfield and some other areas that are underserved, also the adaptive programs at this time we are not charging for. And so we have reviewed on a location-by-location basis. And sometimes we offer without a fee or low fee and then implement a fee as they become more popular. But we do review them case by case.
Okay, I am what I am, and as I told you, reminded the county executive the other day, because I'm hearing the advertising that we're paying for Rockwood for the event that's going on there, and I explained, you know, my big problem, and again, it's me, stickler to where it's free. Just add to you, it's free to you. It's a free admission, but it is not free. There is a cost to everything, and we've got to pay for it. So, and I'm just, thank you. Know what that is, as you're well aware. Thank you.
Councilman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. And correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the programs that are being held at Hokesson were the normal programs, like the evening activities that we previously held in schools and paid for the rent for those schools. Once the Hokesson PAL was built and the schools really didn't want to have their maintenance staff having to stay late at night, a lot of things were transferred over to a building that we basically owned.
Well before my time, it's back in my youth.
Yeah, mine too. Dream on.
Any additional comment, question, members of council? Councilman Street?
Two, three things. One, thank you so much for your continued work with the city to expand the summer lunch program out into the county. And, you know, the 5,000 meals, and I'm not going to blindside you, but I am going to, when I come to the meeting, suggest that in an effort to serve Holloway Terrace, since we couldn't get the park, then maybe we consider the playground at Rose Hill in the back, which is accessible. And all the things that you're doing that, you know, would not have been done if we weren't innovative and creative. And, you know, a lot of those kids, I'm not going to say all of them, but a lot of those kids, it makes a difference with meals. And I'll leave it at that. And second, I like picking at Councilman Smiley. You know, we got kids and who are engage in positive things under supervision, and that reduces the likelihood of
then we come to involve the drugs that produces the likelihood of teen pregnancy and all those things, and with fitness for a senior, that in, you know, if they're healthy, then that increases the likelihood of our paramedics not having to go pick them up. So to me, everything we're doing is cost effective and very much needed and very much appreciated.
Councilman Smalley.
In our usual mode of sparring, let me follow up and remind everyone, it's not that I said I didn't like it. I just like to know what it costs. I'm not allowed to ask at home, but I don't want to ask at home. So this is where I get it out of my system. Thank you.
Councilman Street.
I can't be all positive. I guess it's just something about me. But, you know, all the things we put up here, I'm not going to forget and let go away that we had a former president that was going to try to shut that down for whatever reason, both at Hocasson and Garfield. So, you know, I'm glad council stayed steadfast in this position. And I'm glad we continue to provide the services that we're providing.
Thank you, Councilman. I would agree. Any additional comment or question, members of council? Any comment or question from members of the public? Yes, ma'am.
Mary Stewart. Before Sherry Freeberry was chief administrative officer, the county held recreation programs in many local schools. I mean, there was one just two blocks from my home, and my kids were able to go without having to get in the car. And it was marvelous. And I'd like to see more attention to programs in local schools, just because they're so convenient for people. And Sherry's reason was simple enough. If you had your programs in a county facility, she could issue orders, and people would say, yes, ma'am, or else. If you had used local schools as long as some other people, you had to be polite to them. And the people sort of missed that. I mean, we lost loads of programs for adults, and we slowly climbed back toward serving a broader range of people. The local libraries were not set up to be gymnasiums. The schools mostly had them. And if you could get a policy which encouraged use of local schools as well as of county facilities, it would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you very much. Councilman Street.
And I understand the concern, and I understand what was. By the same token, I wasn't, whoever decided what then, but as we go down that road, folks need to understand that in order to utilize schools, you got to at least pay for the janitor, which is usually $50 an hour. And that's $50 an hour, at least $50 an hour for 4 or 5 hours. And if you're open every night, well, now Smalley, Mr. Councilman Smalley is going to have another major concern. So you need to consider that. And I'm sure somebody eventually had to weigh that out in terms, and then if it's on Saturday, it's more than that, because you got to pay overtime. So, you know, in being fiscally responsible, that's just something we need to look at.
And I think Jane spoke to that to some degree, that what you're speaking of is before we had the PAL centers, and the utilization of the PAL centers sort of centralized a lot of these programs. I don't think there's a shortage of programs at all from the evidence we just saw here. Maybe there's less places where they are being presented, but also there's a cost involved with that. If you were to go to one of the schools, as an example, I mean, how many people would be served at any given school in Newcastle County becomes the other challenge. Some of these places that we put a lot of resources in is by design, because they become destinations. Even the place over and it's not Belvedere, where we have the art place. What is it called?
The Art Studio.
The Art Studio, yeah. That has become Ab Jones has become a destination from people even out of Pennsylvania. So as we began to have more programs and to centralize these programs, there's a benefit to that. And I understand what you're saying as well, but that's where a cost analysis has to come into play, and the schools have to also agree to that partnership.
Throw out here, you know, given the environment then, the environment now, let's make sure we would throw in the cost of a police officer or two at each event. So,
yeah.
I'm done.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on Delaware City, PAL. Have we opened any inroads to possibly expand some of our programs for Delaware City and the surrounding areas?
One of our folks, Jane Rattini, again, our focus is on the Route 40 and south, you know, to serve the southern part of Newcastle County. So that is a priority this year. We are starting to look at additional locations that we can partner with employee space, parks, and, you know, as you can see from the expansion in Middletown itself, but we are looking at Delaware and Odessa and other towns that may be able to support and partner with us and provide us with some space, because that is what the lack of facilities and indoor and outdoor limits what we can offer for sports and recreation.
Because the PAL Center in Delaware City was a school, has gymnasium, has baseball field, everything there, and I'm sure Bob Jamison would and the town would do, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor. Further question or comments? I'll go back to the public for any additional comment or questions. Seeing none, is there anything under other? Councilman Street?
I heard what Councilman Weiner said about the proposal to zero out CDBG.
You heard correctly, yeah.
And I understand that counties across the country are going to fight, but I also think that between the president and the person he's putting in as secretary, they might be just courageous enough to go forward. And then we got people sleeping on the street all across the country, and then we're going to have mass chaos at best. But between the two of them, I am not optimistic that they won't try to seriously make that effort.
I tend to agree with you, given the last couple of months of what's been going on in this country. But again, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, we've been challenged before with CDBG, and Councilman Weiner, Councilman Carrier, and others really through NACO stood there, and you know, we were able to be successful. But we do have a very different president now, to put it mildly. And so we're going to have to continue to be steadfast and continue to fight through our congressional delegation. I believe we will be safe, as Carrie said, for the immediate future. But going forward, I certainly see CDBG as low-hanging fruit that this administration does not care. And the new secretary has said people, to some extent, he made a comment that people are poor by choice. So that's the kind of mindset we're dealing with.
Well, and that's my point exactly. Combination of a president and somebody who blames poor people for being poor, that's a lethal combination. And I think they're going to make a serious effort, which makes our responsibility that much more challenging. I don't think it's a play situation at all. I think between the two of them, it's going to get quite serious.
Yeah. Anything else on the other? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Motion adjourned.
Second.
Thank you very much.